Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Oh, I do feel welcomed. Thank you.
You do?
Oh, that wasn't for me.
No, it wasn't.
That was for them.
But welcome to you.
Oh, thanks.
Jesse Gaskell.
Thank you, Mike Sweeney. Former head writer.
Yes, going back a ways.
Of Conan.
For Conan and a former writer slash fantastic writer for Conan.
Archivist.
Archivist.
Is that a word?
Archivist? Yeah, how do you say it?
Archivist? I don't know.
I don't know either. Could be a fan
question.
That's
what we're doing now on this show.
Yeah.
We're going back through Conan's storied career in late night television.
Yes.
We're telling every excruciating detail.
We are really rolling out the dough, beating it to a thin pulp.
Yes.
And we're going to make...
This dough is not fighting back.
One very, a molecule thick crust of pizza. But I'm excited about tonight's show because we're really dealing with a very specific period of the Conan show. Last year... On TBS.
Yeah, during the pandemic.
Yes, everything was, of course, topsy-turvy from the lockdown. And then when Conan returned to the air, it was at a theater here in LA. And we're going to talk to the man behind that theater. He's kind of a legend in LA.
Yeah, he's got a lot of showbiz stories, but he's been a big, important part of the comedy community.
Very big. And music as well.
And music.
Which I knew less about. I was more aware of, all the comedy stuff. And then you're just like, whoa, you hear about all the music, the big music acts he worked with.
Yeah, he was friends with Elliott Smith. Okay, cool.
Yeah, kind of cool.
That's important.
But what about Belle and Sebastian? I like to throw them out.
He probably knows them too.
He probably does and was too modest to mention them. So you have some news.
I do.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Well, and I feel a little silly because I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago that I revealed that I was looking for work.
Yeah.
Maybe it was within the last few weeks.
So where's the silly part?
Well, I found work.
Yes, you got a new job.
But... I want to make it clear that I was looking for longer than that period of time. It wasn't like I said, I think I'll try to get a job. And then 2 weeks later, I had a job.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
I wish it did. That would be fantastic.
That was the point I was at when I mentioned it was I was getting a little bit desperate and I felt like I needed to put it out into the universe.
Right.
And the universe spoke back.
Well, let's test it right now. Hey, I'd love a job. I'm the control case. Like a month from now,
it'll be
like, no, still no work for Mike. Well, so yeah, it's an exciting new job. And you got the job. It's like bang, bang, right? You got the offer on a Thursday and boom, you're in the writer's room on Monday.
So that's the crazy thing that happens in this industry a lot is you find out, well, I got a job offer.
Right.
Yeah. On Thursday. And then my manager offered and you know it was like I still haven't even officially signed the contract, but the room started on Monday, so it's all just a real whirlwind.
That is a whirlwind.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And I have to go in person to a room. I have to put on pants and shoes and socks and drive in my car.
But still bring
like
your dog with you.
Like I work at a bank or something.
Right. How many people are in the room?
There's about 10 people.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. And right now we're just, so the job is writing for a scripted comedy for Fox.
Uh-huh.
It's called Welcome to Flatch.
Oh, that premiered last season, right? So this is the second season.
So they've done one season and this is the second season.
Wow.
That's going to come out in the fall. But I think it's a fast process. Like they're going to start filming in August.
Wow. That is really fast.
So we have from now until August to break the whole season and then break it out into episodes and then the episodes start filming.
Wow. And so just to explain breaking, when you say break the season, is that the first step of deciding what the entire story and journey of the season will be and then trying to divide it up into the episodes?
Yes. And
okay.
It goes from really broad to specific. So right now we're still in the super broad space of just trying to figure out where the characters' arcs are going to start and end up this season.
I'm really curious to hear about it because I always wonder about that. Like, when you think about it, anything could happen, I assume, on the show. And I wonder if it's just a thing where by consensus, all 10 of you are like, oh, yes, this is the arc of the season. This is what should happen. Or does the person in charge have to take all these pitches and just go, all right, we're going to go this way. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder how.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit more the second thing. So there's a showrunner and it's ultimately up to her.
Right.
But I think you just talk things over and you kind of look at things from every possible angle. And you, if there's a story thread that you like, you kind of play it out to its conclusion or how does this affect everybody else in the show? And how does this affect the future of the show? And make sure that it gives you a lot of options.
Right. So, and if there's a third season, because you don't want to, you don't want to go down almost like, you know, this alleyway that, oh, wait, where do we go from here? You know, you do have to keep, like you're saying,
keep the momentum.
Right.
On the other hand, you also don't want to get nothing to ever happen to anybody. It's not that kind of show where people completely start and end every episode in the same place. So you want there to be a little bit of movement for characters.
They're not all bottle episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But I have to be honest, the craziest thing so far about this job is that we don't look at our phones all day.
What?
I know.
wait.
It sounds so silly to say, but it's really, I mean, it's kind of been awesome. I feel like I'm at a retreat for digital addiction or something.
What, do you leave the phone out literally outside the room or
I mean, we don't like have to lock them up.
No, I'm serious.
But it's just, everyone has them in their bags under the table and you just don't take it out until lunchtime and then at the end of the day. And those are the two times you kind of can look at your phone.
So they just laid the law down. They said, hey, we don't have phones here. Or
No one even said it. I think it just the showrunner set the example and everybody else followed suit and no one's been the first to break it.
I never had my cell phone out and all you assholes had your fucking phones out the whole, oh my God,
it was constant. Oh, was that upsetting as head writer?
No, it was great. When you're done reading your tweets, can we?
Yeah, no, people would just be sitting there and then someone would say like, oh my God. And then we'd have to address whatever it was that they were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, everything got done, so it wasn't that disruptive, really.
Well, let's get into our show.
Yes, because it's almost midnight.
It's midnight somewhere.
It always is.
We already teed it up a little bit.
I did. I jumped the gun. I teased it.
You teased it because you knew that people wouldn't stick around for our bullshit otherwise.
No way.
But yeah, we're talking to the man behind Largo, Mark Flanagan, or Flanny.
Popularly known as Flanny.
Flanny, as his friends call him.
And he started...
I hope we're his friends.
He really made Largo into an institution, and first with musicians, so many famous names, as you'll hear. And then he decided to add comics to the mix. And then it really,
really took off.
Really took off. A few years ago, well, several years ago, well, okay, 2008, I think, they moved to Largo at the Cornet Theater.
Right. Because initially it was at a different space.
A different space. And it really is a beloved music and comedy institution.
And now Conan is a part of that institution. It's a very cool, it's just like all the cool people played there.
Just an amazing history of music and comedy at Largo. And as you were saying, Conan became a big part of Largo during the pandemic.
Yes. Largo was the reason Conan was able to film in a studio type mm-hmm. setting. Mm-hmm. And I think it really helped Conan from going insane during that time.
Yes. He needed to do a show, and he needed to not be doing it in the one room in his house.
So we all have Flanny to thank for that.
Yes. And that's where the TBS show ended up wrapping. I mean, no one foresaw things going that way, but last June, the TBS show wrapped from Largo. Mm-hmm. And the exciting thing was the very last 2 weeks, LA opened up a little bit by coincidence, as so that Conan was able to bring in live audiences for those last 2 weeks of shows, which
was really special.
It made everything special.
We were just losing our minds. It was like, oh my God. I felt like I was at an orgy. Like,
that's right.
Just tongues out, hands yeah. groping.
Yeah. Just people outside and gathered in a theater again. It seemed,
yeah,
it did seem blatantly illegal.
And very sexy. So here he is, Mark Flanagan. Flanny. Flanny, can you tell us how you first got involved with Largo?
A friend of mine was opening, his wife was part of kind of like a small conglomerate of Irish people that were going to open a bar, and they didn't know where they were going to open. And then he said to me, you know, they're taking over this place called Cafe Largo that was already a venue, and it was run by a French guy. And they were like, you know, you know a bit about music. And I was like, yeah,
I've listened to it.
Yeah. And it just was one of those things that I stumbled right into it, you know.
Wow.
But that was 1992. So it's 30 years ago. And I kind of booked the place for a year, and it was wildly successful right away. Like, I mean, it was just, and after a year, the guy that ran the place, who was the kind of the, you know, he was the owner of it, and I was partial owner, he decided that overnight he was going to turn it into a sports bar.
Oh, God.
And that night we had Dr. John with Branford Marsalis. Like, it was an incredible.
Oh, my God. You know,
and I was like, okay, I'm out. So he was going to pay me off. And through a long process, which actually took 3 years, and I was booking Largo at other places. I was booking at the Troubadour and different places in town. Uh-huh. Knowing that I loved doing that, loved music, loved comedy, I continued working with like Amy Mann and John Bryan and right. the Eels right. and this the different band. It kept me very busy.
Right.
And then suddenly I got a call from a lawyer saying the judge wants to give you the old venue back because the guy can't pay you any money. And he's run it into the ground. And I was like, Jesus. And I went in and it was a mess.
Just
and
so sticky I had, everywhere.
Yeah. And I had to come up with money to try and, you know, reboot it. And I thought, well, I'll do it for a few years and then unload it because it was small. And mm-hmm. I really didn't want to run a restaurant or a bar. And that's what that was. Mm-hmm. Then I was sole owner in 1997 and been sole owner ever since. But it's one of these things, and I'm sure you guys are the same. You get into something and you're like, I'll see how this goes.
Right.
And here we are, you know.
And then 30 years go by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I can't say it feels fast, but I mean, even the Conan year, it just feels like that was years ago already, you know.
Yes.
But we've all been through so much.
Right.
We were just getting up to you introducing comics because comedians then became such an integral part, I think, of the Largo reputation and story.
Yeah.
The second you started bringing comics in, was that just instantly?
So the craziest thing is
a great mix.
Yeah, comics were coming. Now, it's almost like right now at Largo when somebody's, you know, some of my staff will say, oh my God, such and such is here. And I'm like, I have no idea. From a TV show, I have no idea who that
right.
is. Well, back then it was like, oh my God, Mitch Hedberg's here. And I'm like, who?
Yeah.
So then I went, this is who I need here. This is so.
Yeah.
So I decided to start a Monday night comedy only night, you know, and then I had to figure out, well, who, I don't know these people, so I need somebody. So this guy introduced me to another guy who was promoting shows around town, and he was doing Pedro's Bar and Grill in, I think it was Los Feliz. And I went over one night, and the show was hosted by Karen Kilgariff, and it was John Stewart, Laura Keitlinger, Janine Garofalo, and I think Cross. I mean, it was like, David Cross. That was the show.
Wow.
It was called La Parade, you know, and I was like, I even dropped Cafe from Largo because I thought it was pretentious. So I didn't need La Parade. Right. So I said, hey, man, would you just call it the comedy show or just call it comedy? Anyway, we started off and Cross and Odenkirk were, I think, the first hosts.
Oh, wow.
And it was just every Monday night, it was the greatest. If you weren't from LA, it was definitely New Yorkers were like, okay, this is the spot. Because there was, it wasn't a comedy club, but there was people. And I also wouldn't let cell phones, photographs, no talking during the show. So it was kind of...
You were ahead of your time, barring cell phones. I love that.
And still, you know. But so also, a lot of people would come out for, there was a, you know, like pilot season or coming out to do, you know, whatever show it was on TV, they would come out and do stuff and they'd be in town for a while.
Right.
And so they would jump up. And at that point, which is kind of like the late 90s, I think the Comedy Store and the Improv and some of those places were less... traveled for the people that we love.
Yes.
You know, they were looking for the alternative to the alternative, you know.
Well, you know, the like places like the Improv, there'd be a lot of great comics on the stage.
Yeah.
But there were also, I'd see people there where it's like, oh, you're an actor, but you went into comedy because you heard it can help you get on a TV show. Like you could literally tell.
Yeah. You want to be the next Seinfeld.
Right. And they weren't super funny or original, but they had a great look, you know, like that kind of sitcom look.
I've never been, it's so funny with this comedy club, like the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
I've never been to any of these places. I went to the Comedy Store once.
Right.
But anyway, so very quickly, it started on a Monday night, boom, it took off. Sarah Silverman, Paul F. Tompkins, Greg Proops, you know, all these people that are part of the Conan family too, were just in there, ready to go, ready to do anything. And then from that, within about 6 months, I was like, to Patton Oswalt and Sarah Silverman, you should do your own night here. And have a couple of your friends so they could stretch a bit more. And so that, and then so really around, I would say 98, 99, a lot of shows started to do monthly shows, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't just strictly stand-up. It was like
a residency.
And I would make it more of a kind of, I hate the word, but like a variety thing. So there'd be music, comedy, a couple of sketches.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember I first moved to LA. We went to see Paul F. Tompkins show every month.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic.
Did you ever see, like, we had the Naked Trucker and T-Bone show? It was And Tenacious D. So there was a lot of stuff like that, like way back, you know.
And you had the piano there. I mean, did people sometimes just decide to sit and like, I had read somewhere that Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, that's right.
That was sort of spontaneous that he started playing.
That's right. And there. You know, there's other people that won't ask for a piano. So like, for example, Tig, who performs all the time at Largo.
Tig Notaro.
And she started writing bits because the Largo piano was there, you know, and she would, and she's not a pianist.
Yeah.
And she would sit down and have this whole thing about like guys, get ready, you know. So for Zach, that was the thing. And then he kind of stopped doing that because he'd go to venues that just didn't have pianos. And he was too nice to ask, could you get me a piano? And then there's Bo Burnham, who started you know, 12, 13 years ago. And he had a very specific keyboard. And I used to see him pulling up the back and trying to get this thing out of his fucking car. And I was like, how much are these things? And he was like, they're not that expensive. So I bought him a keyboard. So anytime he comes in, the keyboard's there and he doesn't have to drag this thing. Because he doesn't play a regular piano.
That's
great. Yeah.
So you just have a room full of keyboards, everyone's special keyboards.
Little things left over. Like, I mean, you know, there's even stuff from the Conan stint there that is still backstage, you know, because it's just character building, I think, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of print paper.
Yes, a lot of Conan's headshots, mostly.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds right. I remember the first time I saw Zach in New York and he was just doing the piano and it was just so simple, but so great.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, that's such a, so I loved hearing that it just kind of happened organically at Largo, which I never knew. That's,
we're so lucky to, you know, I think about it all the time. We're so lucky to have people like him and Tig and Jack Black and people that are just like Maya Rudolph, that you just look at them and they make you feel better, you know?
But you know what? You created this, you know, environment where everyone just, especially comics, I think, are just like instantly like, oh, there's a great place to hang out. And, you know.
It is, but it also can play against, it plays against you a little bit sometimes where it feels like it's a clicky thing. And I never wanted it to be a clicky thing. I wanted it to be a family. In fact, I had a name for the place. I didn't want to call it Largo. I wanted to call it The Residency, which is a place in Belfast, which was a famous bar that would have different things. And I just love the idea of like The Residency had a feeling of like Cheers, like environment. Like you'd go back and there would be something that you liked coming up again, you know.
Right.
But it was so much money to change the name for license wise and stuff, you know. So.
Yeah.
Largo and you became a really important part of the evolution of Conan's show, because during COVID, initially we left our studio at Warner Brothers. Right. We thought we were leaving for a couple of weeks. That's what we were told. And then we never went back there.
Right.
We were just shut down indefinitely. And Conan was doing shows at home. I think at first was just filming himself on his iPhone.
Yeah.
Right.
With probably the kids helping him, maybe.
Yeah.
There's a family member.
And then it's like, yeah, the laptop would just bang out a few segments over Zoom at home.
And really quickly, I started getting calls from JP Buck. Hey, would you talk to Ross about possibly getting Conan out of the house?
Oh, wow.
Did you already know JP?
I knew JP.
And stand-ups?
Yes, I knew JP. But also, like, I mean,
show.
Catching up with everything, Andy Richter has been a Largo person for 100 years.
Oh, of course.
So, oh, yeah.
You know, so, and he and I are friends. So
that's
it's like,
right.
But also, which is very important, and I thought about this before we spoke, like, I've been my own guy for, you know, 30 years in terms of Largo. And I've had opportunity where people are like, hey, what if we come in and did something with you? And I've always said no. Mm-hmm. When this came up, it was like, we had been closed for 6 weeks. And at that point, it dawned on me that this could be a year. Nobody else was thinking it was going to be a year, but I was like, this could be a long.
Oh, yeah. You knew.
Well, I felt, you know, I just felt like, well, you know, I don't know. Nobody knows about, at that point, we didn't know about viruses and all that information. But anyway, enough to know that it was like turning on the TV and seeing Conan. I watched every episode where he was at home,
right.
You know, and I knew that there was probably three of you there with him, like giving him, dropping off, because it was so frightening at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
So when JP asked me, hey, would you talk to Ross? Because I think they want to try and figure out some sort of a low-key thing at Largo. And I was like, well, I don't have any staff, and it's kind of dangerous. I mean, right now it seems,
right.
You know, and so that was the initial thing. And I feel that was like probably the lockdown was, we shut earlier than the lockdown. So March. And so I started getting the call late April, around that time, talking to Jeff Ross.
Okay.
How could we do this safely? And then we did a walkthrough. So probably, I feel like that was May, and Conan and Jason and Jeff came. And we were like looking at it. Mm-hmm. And there was technical things, obviously, you know, because of internet connections and then the noise in the neighborhood. Because we've never done anything during the day. It's a night place, you know. So that was a huge factor. And but even it was so strange because even though it was only been a couple of months, but just seeing people outside your family was even a shock.
Yeah.
We were all double masked, and it was like very careful and like 20 feet apart from each other. And, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Hosing things down in between. Yeah.
So it was very quick that when we did the walkthrough, they were like, yeah, we can do this. And I figured out like I could have a couple staff members just for security and also just to show where the lights go on and off. But Jeff and I talked about, if we're going to do this, it'll probably be a year. Because we have to cut, you know, there's so many legal things with like the studio.
Oh.
With insurance, which was huge, you know.
Right.
We put in a plan and we started. So in July, I think, late July, I think, is when we started.
And then, so that was when Conan came in and started doing daily shows at Largo, which was, I mean, you could see such a difference just in his mood too.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, it's like,
he'd been like a caged animal.
Yeah. I've listened to some of your guests, and I think Reggie said it best. He's a people person. Like, he just responds to, even Mike, when you would come in, his whole mood would be, you know,
it would go down.
No, but it would be like, okay, we've got something's cooking here. And you see his blood start and his mind start to think.
Yeah.
And he's always been the best guy to me. Like, I've never had, you know, the experiences that people have with somebody of his stature. It's just always been fun, making fun of each other. And then but I see different dynamics when, you know, when it's slow and he's sitting there and it's like the Zoom thing's not working and you've got, you know, or we'd have to pause because ambulances were literally, because Cedars Sinai is across the street, near.
Right.
That's right. Giant hospital.
Yeah, COVID patients were driving past, flying past in ambulances every day, you know.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
I mean, first of all, there was the cachet of like, it's Conan.
Yeah.
And you guys are my taste. So it was like, that was a perfect thing.
Right.
But then I was thinking for the safety of my staff and my family and this fucking virus and shit. I was like,
right.
And then Jason was just, again, go back to Jason. He was the guy that I was just like,
yes, Jason Shalemi,
our producer.
From day one, I was.
He puts you right at ease.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also there's that attitude that was like, we'll try anything unless we can't.
Yes.
And I kind of love that.
Whatever you need.
Yeah. And so he would constantly come to me on a daily basis or the night before and go, hey, are you up for this? And I'm like, fuck it. At this point, yes.
Right, right.
Honestly, after a couple of months, I thought that we possibly may not open again because, well, a couple of things of like, I thought it would be over in a year, but also that year you're closed, your rent alone is $35,000 a month. And I knew the government wasn't going to give me that money. you know.
Right.
No. And so $1,200.
Yeah, you know, which is what Jeff Ross wanted to pay a monthly for Conan being at Largo. I think it was $12.25.
You got him up to 15.
But it was great. So the great thing is that we were able to, with Sarah and everybody else, work out a deal where this amount of money would cover the staff, a little bit of rent, the insurance, you know, stuff like that. So, and then we were off and running. But then it dawned on me that, you know, especially when it looked like you guys weren't going, when TBS was going to possibly end.
Right.
And then it was announced. I had a feeling like maybe this is my ending too, you know, in terms of that location.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I really.
That's
really scary. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Because back then, it was also open-ended. It was hard to see light at the end of the tunnel.
And a lot of our friends, like Nick Kroll, John Mulaney, a lot of the people that perform at Largo had just had kids.
Right.
And I was like, there's no fucking way they're going to risk their you know.
Yeah, all those pandemic babies.
Yeah.
How dare they reproduce?
And the moment that we got the all clear after Conan left, it was a while before I even booked people because people were like, really?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to push into it, but you know.
Well, but it probably helped. So the last 2 weeks of Conan on TBS were in person with crowds. And that was so wonderful to be there in that audience because everyone was just so hungry for live comedy at that point because we hadn't done anything in a year.
Yeah. And you guys hadn't even really seen each other. You know, I remember that. Like
I mean, the staff too.
Yeah, the staff. It was almost like every night was a beautiful kind of get together, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like the Comic-Con shows where we're going, you know, like a road show and everyone's there and everyone's hanging out in the courtyard afterwards. And so that must have at least given you a little glimmer of like, okay, there's the audience is there that people want to come back and see live comedy
there
again.
Was, but if you remember, like these were the first shows that Conan's show was the first show to go to a theater. It was the first show to have a live audience, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And also it was, we were all sitting there going, can we do it without masks? Because I mean, he doesn't want to fucking look out to the audience and not see faces. I mean, so there were hurdles that we overcame towards the end of it, but the numbers were still kind of going up and down while we were doing it. And we had to reduce the capacity and, you know, each day let a certain few more people in than we did the night before. And
but it was day to day as to whether the audience had to wear masks and all that stuff. I remember was,
and even there was the risk of like, what if one of, and by the way, this is the real thing that I think about is from day one, when Conan came, there was five of them and three of us, which became eight of us. But like, I was like, if one person goes down, we have to shut for 10 days with COVID.
That's right.
Right.
And that never ended until, you know, honestly, after everybody was loading stuff out, I was like, I can't believe I went through the whole thing that none of us got COVID.
No one got
it. That is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable.
Because I worked on productions where like everyone got it.
And by the way, at the same time, it was like some of the guests that were supposed to come on had COVID and could, you know.
Yeah.
So, and now we're back at it again where it's more people than even then are testing positive around us, you know.
Right.
We're still free. The family and the Largo family still haven't had COVID, but
wow.
Oh,
certainly
amazing.
Everybody around us seems to have had it. You
well,
know?
It's coming
it
for
seems
you.
To
yes,
be
it is. Yes, it is. But the Conan thing, like even, you know, some of the stuff that fans would like to hear is like, it was very intimate, but like, it was a beautiful time because you're with friends and we're all, there was a common purpose, but you left the house each day, even if it was only for a few hours. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of fun considering what we were going through, you know?
Yes.
And I would sit with Sona behind the red curtain, which is Conan would come out and her hair, you know, mess with her every time before she went. And we would just laugh. And and then, you know, Sona and I would start laughing and spoil a take every, you know, and stuff like that. But it was very, he created a vibe, you know, that it was very nice, you know?
Yeah.
And ironically too, that I think we may have talked about this, but like 3 weeks before the lockdown, we did a show and it was a Judd Apatow show and Conan was the guest on it, was one of the guests on it. It was Adam Sandler, Conan, Bo Burnham, and I think Weird Al. It was like an Eric Idle. It was a crazy show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And Conan came over after doing your show and just ran on stage. He had the most fun. Like he was just, you know.
I remember he was talking about the next day. He was so excited.
The craziest thing is he walked on and he was like, what's up, fuckers? Like he did shit that he's never done before. Judd was still on stage. And a guy in the front row stood up and goes, I can't believe it. I just went to see your show. And he meant the taping. He was at a taping.
Right.
And Conan was like, you want to fucking fight me? And like, it was bananas, but he had so much fun. And when he walked off stage, he goes,
he's on a lot of cocaine.
Right. But he walked off stage and we've had this conversation many times over the years because he's done a TIG show. He's done other many, many things. And I was like, I think you need to do more of this, you know? And but also as a club owner who books things, I don't want to be the schmarmy guy, but it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And then I think that was in his head when he was sitting at home with a fucking computer going, well, that was a fun place, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
He just loves Largo, and he loves...
Yeah.
It's such a great place to hear music and comedy. It's, yeah, there's just such great energy in there. Yeah.
Friendly. Yeah. I mean, obviously that is coming down from you, Flanny, I'm sure. It's fun to hear you say that you didn't want it to feel too clicky, because...
Yeah.
I think there are other comedy clubs where that was the case, right, and that it never felt that way.
But you know, the funny thing too is that it's not clicky, but it's certainly family. There's so many people that contact me and friends of mine that met each other at Largo and got married, you know.
Oh,
people,
my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like Jonah Ray told me the other night that he came to see They Might Be Giants on his first date with his now wife at Largo.
Oh, wow.
And Patton Oswalt met his wife at Largo. Like, there's a lot of people that were just like, oh, hey, you.
Wow. You should have a matchmaking service.
I think I have. I get invited to all these weddings. It's even customers, you know, they're just like, hey, we met, would you? And I'm like,
I'm booked already. Yeah.
It's cultivated. And then also getting back to what Mike was saying, there was a thing from New Yorkers coming in that was like, this is our place to hang. This is, there was a bar at the old place that...
It's a good bar.
Yeah. And it poured a good pint of Guinness, and but also it was just not pretentious. You could just hang out and it became a home for a lot of comedians and musicians that we know.
Right.
And that became and still is a really, like Patton Oswalt with Amy Mann, like they're best friends. Paul F. Tompkins is friends with all these musicians. And, and I think a lot of that, the seeds grew at Largo, you know.
Well, and there is such a crossover with comedians and or musicians.
Very much.
I feel like they always want to do the other thing.
Right.
Each one wants the other job.
Right.
Yeah, no, there is a long tradition of comics playing harmonica.
But having said that, there is some, like, you know, sitting backstage with people, we have, you know, and you'll hear, like, Dimitri Martin is a really good musician, you know, and it comes across in his act. He, like, he's an amazing guitar player, but he has it in his act. And same thing with Nick Thune, who has it in his act. But a lot of these guys, you know, there's a comedian called Mae Martin, who's from Canada, but she's been coming around it, and she's a good piano player. And so she sits before the show, you'll hear her playing the piano and stuff, you know.
You know, another thing I think made the shows with Conan special at Largo was just having Andy as the sole audience member in the audience. And that was a great energy to play off of, I think, you know, for Conan.
It evolved so beautifully because it was just him by himself in this empty theater. Mm-hmm. And then there was the cardboard cutouts that showed up.
Yeah.
Those were great.
You know, the fans sent in their, they became things.
Right, which is a great idea.
And then there was a day that Andy took a kind of a hacksaw to James Comey, who was one of the cutouts, and cut his stomach out and stuff.
Life-size.
Those were just so much fun. Like, I mean, you know.
What happened to all those?
Yes. Do you know?
Were you stuck with them at the end?
No. Well, I wanted to keep Ruth Bader was one of them. So we kept, I think we have that.
Good.
But I mean, I think that a whole bunch of us need to do an episode where we go to the storage facility.
Oh,
did they store? I know. Are those in storage?
Oh, straight to storage.
Wow.
Yeah, John showed up. Like all the guys showed up, and they were like, "This is going there. This is going here."
We do need to go explore the storage facility because Jeff was just talking about how much they pay for it. They probably have things there they don't even know they're paying
Conan's
to store
for tourists.
But also, like the amount of stuff, even the year that we're there, the amount of stuff that is sent to Conan from fans.
Yeah.
From
right.
But also, when we did the live shows, like suddenly the big bubblehead showed up. I'm like, where the fuck did this come from?
And right.
It took up the storage. Whole court. Yeah. So yeah. I think they're all still there. I think it'd be funny to see the two of you go in there and be like, oh no.
Yeah.
I know.
It'd be funny for the first 30 seconds. And then we'd be like, it's 200 degrees in here.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
What have we done?
That's true.
Well, we pitched ideas. It's like, oh, we got to have a big send-off for the cardboard audience members. Remember that,
Viking
Jesse?
Viking funeral.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course, the show was...
Then we did nothing.
Right. And it was the last 2 weeks of shows, and there are all these big guests, and that whole idea just went on the back shelf.
Getting back to Andy, I'm sure there was a lot of stuff that...
Yeah.
Like when we did the first initial thing, like Conan was standing on stage and Ross and Jason and I are in the audience, and he's like,
right.
How about Jimmy Vivino on a stool just playing acoustic guitar? And they're like, nope. And what about Andy? Nope. I mean, it was that strict in terms of what they would let us do.
Oh, the first... Right.
And that was... Who was deciding that? The insurance people?
Yeah, I think it could have been, but it was definitely coming from the top. And it wasn't a budgetary thing. But what I was going to say, Mike, was like when Andy finally came in,
right.
It did change the element thing. But I was thinking about you and about like coming up with ideas that you just can't fucking do because the constrictions were so strict at that time, you know. And then in the last 2 weeks, you finally go, oh, here's Jack Black. Let's fucking play with him, you know. And it was,
right.
Yeah,
you know,
let's
mostly it was just Zoom
have
stuff.
Have him break his leg.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, before we get to the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Do you, and maybe this didn't seem like a big deal when it happened, but do you remember the first guest? Because every show, Conan's guests would be over Zoom.
Right.
Even though he was in the Largo, from the Largo Theater. Do you remember the first time a guest, he did an in-person interview on that
and
stage.
John C. Reilly really wanted to be the first and like was calling multiple people saying, I think I'm going to be the first. There was a couple times where it was like, you know, in terms of your schedule, you know, you do your 3 weeks and then you've got a week off and then you come back for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had a schedule that Jason would give us, you know, for the next 2 months so that we could figure out what we're doing.
Right.
And a lot of the times we would go an extra week just because the numbers were starting to climb. We're like, we better try and get a few more in here, you know.
To bank a few more shows. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Squeeze them in.
It did seem kind of like a stars aligning for the last 2 weeks of that show where all of a sudden LA was talking about letting people go back and be audiences. That was one. And then for the last 2 weeks, all these great guests started filling in to appear on the show. And so you had those last 2 weeks, the great combo of yay, a live audience again,
right.
Plus these incredible guests coming on. It really got this kind of head of steam.
But do you remember you and I and that we had a team meeting in the courtyard and we were thinking like, okay, what are the live shows going to be? And Conan was just like, it's going to be normal. It's going to be kind of the full band. And Ross was like, you know, I was just like, I'm going to go into the audience. Nope, you're not.
That's
you know?
Their relationship.
Yes. Yeah. So, but it was, and we were all kind of like, Richter was there. We were all there going, hopefully that'll be it. And then it transpired that I think we got away with most of the stuff that you wanted to do.
Yeah.
But there was also, along with the joy, as life in general, like along with the joy of getting people back, it was also the end of the show to a degree.
Right.
Right.
And so to me, that was a bummer. Because I mean, I've been to the TBS show. I've been to see Zach. I went with Zach to see your show. And I went when David Bowie was a guest, I was like, fuck, I'm going, you know. Uh-huh. And so I had seen the big machine working. And then I saw the small machine and then the small machine building back up to all of everybody being there again, you know?
Right.
But there was a certain thing of like, I remember, you know, the last night with you guys all sitting in the back row and I couldn't look back because it was like, we're all in tears.
Yeah.
It was just, you know?
Yeah, no.
It was really emotional.
Was.
Especially Conan doing his
yes.
thank yous and...
Yeah.
Well, Matt O'Brien, the head writer, was basically running all that comedy at Largo, including the last 2 weeks. And of course, you mentioned the Jack Black show. There's a big sketch planned with him. And that was a crazy afternoon.
We knew that you guys, even before, we knew that there'd be something very special because he loves Conan and he loves your show. And
right.
And so he had texted me because there was a thing too that, you know, we couldn't even have friends backstage or family or anything. And anytime Jack's ever done something, like he would even, you know, I think there was a consideration, could his boys come to it and stuff? And we were like, it was very strict and whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got a call from him and he's like, hey, can't wait to do this. And then he did an Instagram post saying that he was going to do it. And it was very funny.
Right.
And so everything seemed really to be funny. Good. And then I was there and Andy and I were talking to him and he was running through things with Jimmy and the band. Yeah. Everything was great. And then we moved outside because there was an ambulance waiting on La Cienega for him for the sketch.
He was doing a bit.
A joke ambulance. Right. Yes.
A joke ambulance.
He was on stage.
Totally.
And he was going to rip his clothes off.
Right. But the thing about the joke ambulance is that, like, for a year there were ambulances on La Cienega just because there was too many ambulances at Cedars Hospital. So it was kind of like people walking by were like, oh, there it is again.
There it is.
So he had the sketch that they were doing and it was hysterical. He was the idea was that he would do anything for Conan and then he falls and he hurts himself, but the show must go on.
Right.
And then they're like, no, you got to, I think the sketch was pretty much they come with a stretcher, these two guys and paramedics, and they take him to the ambulance and then he busts out of the ambulance. No, the show must go on.
Yeah.
So they ran this and I sat there watching it, you know, with Jeff Ross and others, and I was just watching it. And every time he's 120%, like he's just going at it.
Yeah.
And then I was around the wall, so I didn't see it happen. I heard everyone going, oh no, oh no, are you okay? Are you okay? And I was like, first off, I thought maybe Conan fell because he was standing by the entrance or something. And Jack's on the ground and he's taking off one of his white shiny boots. And I was like, oh. And he had done something similar on the Godzilla movie years before.
Pre-existing condition.
Other foot. So this became a big thing. We got ice for him. We went down to the, you know, and he was a trooper, but you could see he was in a lot of pain, like a lot of pain. And so we got him out of there and his friend was there and he drove him home. And I was, you know, it was, we weren't really sure if he would be able to show up for the show, but he kept telling us, I'll be fine.
The next day.
I'll be fine. And so the next day he showed up with the crutch and he was told, really, you shouldn't do this. And again, he comes out and he just like,
still did it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And he killed it.
And people in the room, by the way, the audience had no idea that went on. And I don't think we showed on screens that we had.
No.
Nobody knew. And they're just like, oh, it's
no one knew.
And so everyone thought it was a bit that here he is walking with a boot on his thing and he's going to do something funny.
Yes.
And then Conan explains it and people are like, oh, this is real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I know. It did seem like you're absolutely right. The beginning of some elaborate bit.
Yeah, where he throws away the crutches and he kind of did do, but
yeah. I mean, I've worked with Jack for, you know, over 20 years and he's always had that energy of like, I'll give it all.
Let's do it. Yeah.
And he was so great that day. And it was such a bummer because it was at the end of everything in terms of...
It was the last take.
It was the last take. And he was like, let me do one more, Captain. And then it's like, oh, fuck the dodgy sidewalk. He falls over, you know?
I know it.
And they had already gotten it. It was already in the can.
They'd gotten that. And I've never gotten over his Speedo, his red Speedo. And his white boots. He had white boots on. I was like running in and out of Largo. I was like, oh.
Well, that was a real injury to your
to the psyche.
Your poor orbs. Right.
But yeah, so there was that, it was that double feeling of like joy that we're seeing people in seats again.
Right.
But then also, I was not sure if I wanted to even continue. And this is not some sort of like flippant thing. I'm still going through this thing of, do I need a bigger place that we can spread out more seats? You know, because I believe this pandemic will be with us for a few years.
Yeah.
Or do I just do Largo? I called it, so the initial Largo on Fairfax was just called Largo. And when I moved, I called it Largo at the Coronet.
Right.
And the specific reason was like, well, maybe I'll do that for a few years and then, you know, take Largo somewhere else, you know? And so that's a horizon thing right now that I'm looking at going, maybe it's summer season at John Anson Ford and then do a monthly at the Pantages or, you know, jump up at different places with our cast of clowns and stuff, you know?
It's a cool idea.
Yeah, because Largo is not a place. It's a state of mind.
It has become that.
Yeah, I was wondering, I bet because Tig Notaro did her famous set where she had just found out she had breast cancer. That happened at Largo.
Yeah.
And then that was on This American Life. Was that right?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about that
was
Tig had been doing a regular show at Largo and she got sick with this condition called C. diff, which is a, you know, bacterial poisoning kind of thing. So she was really ill and Sarah Silverman and I and friends went, like, she was at Cedars Hospital. So we'd go and visit her. And then she gradually started getting stronger and better. And she said, I want to do a show. I need a show to kind of get, you know, get back. And she goes, would you help me book it? So her health wasn't great, but it was 2 weeks away. And we were like, okay, so Sarah Silverman wasn't available, but Ed Helms and Bill Burr were available. Marilyn Rice Cup was available, but I was reaching out to Conan, but Conan was back east. So he was replaced by Louis C.K. And but that was the show. And then none of them knew. So 3 days before the show, Tig called me and said, "You're not going to believe this. I just got off the phone with my doctor and I have cancer, you know."
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you talking about? And she goes, "I've got like stage 4 cancer, but I want to do this show."
Oh my God.
So she started treatment the next day. But anyway, she told me that. And I said, "Listen, you should just, if you don't feel well on the day, we cancel. We'll just say you're sick."
Right.
And, but she was adamant. And then she and I had this understanding that she was going to talk about it on stage, but not talk about it to any of the performers. And so she walked out on stage. "Hey, how's everyone doing? I have cancer. How are you doing? I have cancer."
Right.
And it became a very big deal, you know. But
yes,
beside the stage, like Bill Burr, Ed Helms,
wow,
Marilyn Wright, we're all crying. Like, we're just like, this is funny, but Jesus,
yeah,
this is real.
This is more than comedy. Yeah,
yeah,
that is intense.
But it was a big night, you know. And then obviously she shot a documentary about it at Largo and stuff. So it's been this right. thing that people ask me about all the time. But you know, that was a big one, actually.
That was a big one.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting because the theater really has been a central part of all these stories, these LA comedy stories.
Yeah.
We keep coming back to it.
It's funny. You know what I love about your podcast is not you guys at all. No. But is that is that you're bringing in people who are going to tell
us.
We feel the same way.
But yes. You're bringing in.
We're all
you're
the
bringing
same
in
page.
People who are more than a fly in the wall. They're in the trenches with trying to figure out like, oh, how do you make this happen? Or how do you geographically move from the whole thing from New York to LA, and then you talk to tech people.
Right.
But I think most of us want to know, like, you know, the sketches that, like, you're talking about how with Jason, like, you know, he shot stuff in his back garden of his house with Conan, and you were on a bridge,
the run
across America thing. Like, some I that's what I want to hear about, you know, like people who were there, who didn't hear from somebody else, like, you know, I was there, you know.
You know what else was great about that last night? The writers hadn't seen each other in person in a long time, and just a lot of the production staff. And after that show, people met in the courtyard at Largo, and it became basically the de facto rap party.
Yeah, and there were people that have worked with you for so long that came, and we got rid of everybody else, and there was 120 family members, like, you know.
Yeah.
Liza was there, but there was also people who worked on the show that had nothing to do with the Largo stint.
Right.
Were able to finally come and just, you know.
Yes. We had a writer who was hired during COVID, Skylar Higbee.
We had not met him.
He lived in Chicago, and we only knew him from Zoom writers' meetings.
Right.
Like, we were all so delighted, you know, to finally meet him and hang out together.
I met him too, and he was, we were sitting in the back row when the show started, and he was like, "I can't believe I'm at Largo." And I was like, part of it made me feel like so old. And then the other part was like, I wonder what he thought it was going to be like. Because I remember when I moved to Los Angeles, I went to the Troubadour because I was a music fan. And I was like,
right.
I knew that I had this bootleg of Cat Stevens at the Troubadour and Richard Pryor.
Troubadour is legendary.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked in and it was like a fucking toilet. It was horrible. And I was like, this can't be the Troubadour.
Where's the real one?
It got better over the years. But this, like in the early 90s, it was like heavy metal bands and people playing there, and they'd run it down, you know.
No more Elton John.
No more Elton. No Cat Stevens.
No more Elton.
No. I have to tell you a really funny thing that happened was
when
we did the walkthrough and we were all a bit like, you know, again, 20 feet apart from each other.
This is when you first were considering letting.
Yeah. Okay, so Jason Conan.
There. Yeah.
And so somebody came and went into the sound booth and was trying to figure out internet 5G at the time. You know, we needed that.
Right.
And my manager, Michael, who a few years before that had been in a motorcycle accident, somebody rear-ended him and he had lost his spleen. So he has no immune system. Oh. So I was like, I don't want to put you under pressure. Oh. And he goes, no, I'll just be in a different room. But he was very susceptible to the COVID-19.
Yikes.
So anyway, he's standing in the back of the room and Conan's on stage, being Conan, running around like a 6-year-old, having the best time.
Right.
And Ross is there like, you know, looking at the thing. And Jason's like, whatever we need, Captain, put me in.
Yep.
And as I'm talking to Ross and Conan's running back and forth the stage, a part of the ceiling collapsed at the back of the room because it had been raining. It had been raining for 6 weeks and we hadn't been in there. And so it had gathered.
Wow.
And that particular time, it just decided that the plaster just fell on the ground. And
just the sound waves.
And I saw it happening. And it was like it was almost like two crows coming down from the sky. Just went, and Ross, nothing.
Were you trying to cover it up? Like,
no,
nothing to see over here.
I was waiting for somebody to say,
right.
What the fuck was that? Nobody said anything. And they were like, and then Ross and Nisha,
that
Ross
sounds goes, right.
I think it's going to be fine. I think it's going to be great. And I was like, oh, all right.
Oh, they were just so desperate to get out of Conan's yard.
But so by the way, when I left that day, I remember 1997, Elliot Smith, who, you know, I had met, he thought that Largo was too fancy for him to play.
Right.
Because he liked dive bars.
Oh.
And so the first night that I invited him down, I told the waitresses to take all the tablecloths off the tables, no candles, and bring the lights up. And he walked in and he was like, oh, this is way too nice. And it was like the worst it's ever looked. Oh. And I was like, well, fuck, you know. So as John Bryan started playing his songs on the piano, and Elliot was like, oh, shit. Okay, so I can work with this guy.
Okay.
You know? Good. So, okay.
Did they already know each other? Probably.
Right? They had met very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah, just very briefly. And John was, at that point, like, it was before Good Will Hunting. So Elliot wasn't, like, okay. A lot of people didn't know. But the good songwriters were like, oh, shit, here comes Michael Jordan.
Right.
You know, of that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Those are two walkthroughs that were memorable for me.
That's pretty memorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always heard about him hanging out in dive bars.
Yeah, that was his thing.
On Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and even when he became famous, he would go back to Brooklyn, and that's exactly what he would do.
Yeah.
Or karaoke bars and just sit at the bar and, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a vibe.
That's what Conan does now.
That's right.
Well, yeah, Flanny, this has been great.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we didn't cover that you...
I think Sona was the sugar and the ingredient that kept the whole thing very much, very much fun. I mean...
Yes, she was always there.
But the great thing about it was, too, is like, I mean, I knew of Sona and I'd met her briefly, but we went through Sona being there, getting pregnant, being pregnant with twins.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it was fantastic. It was so exciting, you know.
Yes.
And then, and so that was that whole year. It was just, it went from she's trying to get pregnant to holy fuck, they're twins. And then Conan and everyone making fun about what they're going to call them and stuff. So it's like, so basically, it was so much fun, really, the whole thing, you know. And nobody kind of knew anything in terms of like what the prognosis of our future was going to be. So we just lived every day as best we could, you know.
Right. And that is that's a nice way to track a year is in somebody's gestational cycle.
Yeah.
Human
something
life.
Positive.
The creation.
Yeah. I wish you'd stop sending me photographs of them. But I mean,
we'll get the word to her.
Yeah. We'll take you off the mailing list.
Yeah.
No, she is always, I forget how she is always just this giant burst of positive.
Yeah. So dynamic.
Great energy, but also really funny. Just wonderful to have in a room.
Well, it's funny you say that. So her and Jason are, I don't know, they're from the same fountain of like just optimism and just generally
positive.
Good vibes.
You think, are these fuckers Scientologists? Because they're out of 10.
Right.
You know, they're out of 10. They come to you and they're just like, yay!
Right.
And then, then you've got Matt O'Brien kind of sneaking without saying hi to anybody, and Andy Richter going, can I leave?
You know?
Yeah, that's the difference between people who identify as comedians.
Yeah.
And normies.
Yeah. The other thing that happened too, which is just, it struck me last night was while Conan was there, I was dealing with this guy, John Irvin, who's, I think he had a production thing with Jeff Ross at one point, and he's, you know, he's part of the, and he was contacting me constantly saying, hey, Norm MacDonald really wants to shoot his special and he wants to do it as soon as, can he do it while Conan's there? And then Ross was like, I think we could make it happen. And I was like, but we can't bring people in, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
And then, so when things subsided, I started texting him and he goes, I haven't heard anything. And anyway, they just put Norm's special
on Netflix.
And
yeah.
And it's really beautiful. I mean, I kind of was a little bit trepidatious. What I was like, I know him from the Healthy Times and he performed at Largo so many times, but it's an actual beautiful thing to watch. And it's another thing that was happening during the pandemic, like Conan's thing, that was a positive thing.
Right.
Even though Norm's not with us anymore, but he's vibrant, his eyes are electric and his material's really good. So it's worth seeing it. You know?
I watched it last night and
I did too.
Yeah. It was amazing. And then Conan's part of the group.
Yes.
Conan, David Letterman, Dave Chappelle, Molly Shannon, Sandler and Spade are there to kind of, they watch it together.
Right.
Yeah.
And talk it down.
We've been doing this for collectively, like, you know, quite a long time. And you see these ebbs and flows. And I don't take any of it for granted, but like, I really am appreciative of the year that we did with Conan, you know, because it went from seeing him every few months to saying to him, we should do something, to suddenly we're seeing each other every single day. And nobody could have fucking guessed that that would happen, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
But there were like growing up in Belfast, there's always bright spots and it's what you make of things, you know? And I feel like going forward, I can see myself doing more stuff with Conan or with the team and, you know, that it was because it's such a fun bunch. All of you, like, I mean, on the last night, which I'll leave it with, but on the last night, I felt like I wanted to be set it all up that there was appetizers and drinks and everyone could have a thing. But I kind of retracted because I know that that was your thing, you know? So it was kind of like, we came in at the, you know, to blow out the candles kind of thing, but it was beautiful to just sit there and watch people, like, you know, just again, like you said, I hadn't seen each other in, at that point, a year and a half, maybe.
I'm tearing up thinking about it. It was a really special night.
It was.
And I believe going forward, there'll be more special. It's like I stuck my head in when Conan was doing the Orpheum, the Wiltern, the last show that he did.
The Wiltern.
And I was a little freaked out about COVID. So a friend of mine works there. So I just pulled up the front, walked in and watched 20 minutes from the back of the room. And it was just like, him and Jack Black are the two people that should always have audiences. I mean, they're just
right.
Yeah.
They come alive and they make people feel better. And it's,
yeah.
And it's mutual, I think. Like they're getting something from the audience feedback
very
too.
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll have many more.
Well, yeah. Well, he loves you.
He does love you.
And he loves Largo.
Yeah.
I know. I know that that was a special time for him too. And
yeah.
Like you said, everyone was making the best out of bad circumstances. Yeah. But ultimately, it is kind of something that hopefully we'll look back on with some nostalgia.
Yeah.
Well, I love your show and I'm so happy to have, you know.
Oh my gosh. We love you. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. This has been really fun.
All right.
Thanks
great
for
the
positive energy that you brought.
Yeah.
You were the Sona for
You're
us.
You're Sona
today.
And Jason times 10.
Oh my God. That's beautiful.
Thank you, Mark Flanagan, AKA Flanny.
Flanny. Thank you, Flanagan.
And you know what time it is.
Oh, it's time for a listener question.
That's right. This one is a voicemail.
Oh, good. I love voicemails.
Yeah, me too.
Hi, Mike and Jesse. I'm Calvin, and I am a big fan of the podcast and also Conan, TBS. So a question that I have is about one of my favorite remote for the show, and also, I guess, one of the more popular ones on YouTube as well. And it's the remote about Student Driver with Diana Chang, Conan, Ice Cube, and also Kevin Hart. So I'm just wondering, you know, how did that skit come to be? Because I just thought it was such a interesting and weird combination at the same time. And yeah, so I was just wondering, like, who thought of that idea to have, you know, a non-writer to be on a skit, and you know, like how much of it was planned, you know, going to the dispensary and smoking in the car. Yeah, so I'd just like to learn more about that remote. Thank you, and keep going. Love the podcast. Bye.
Oh,
okay.
That was so nice. Thank you, Calvin.
It was nice.
And you know what? I've never met someone who said they were a fan of TBS. I love that.
The network.
The network.
Yeah.
I also love that he gave, in that remote, he gave Diana Chang top billing above Kevin Hart and Ice Cube.
And Ice Cube, yeah. Which I would do as well.
And Conan.
Yeah.
Above everyone.
Well, he had a lot of questions about the remote. And I mean, we've talked a little bit about that remote specifically, but we thought, who better to answer his question than the top billed person in that remote, Diana Chang.
The star. Hello, Diana.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Mike. Thanks. Hey, Jesse.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for helping us tackle a listener question.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Yeah. So what, from your perspective, how did that start? When were you contacted to be in that remote, potentially?
The night before. He called me at 6 p.m. on a Friday.
Oh, boy.
I remember it being like the Friday before we all left for the holidays.
Yes.
Because we just had the holiday party like 2 days before that.
Oh, wow. So you were like on a plane out of L.A., basically.
Well, Sweeney was worried about that. Like, he was like, you called me at 6 p.m. on a Friday and you're like, hey, would you happen to be available tomorrow morning?
That sounds like me.
And I was like, yeah, it's my impression of you.
Yeah, I like it. Mealy mouthed.
Hey. And like, when I said yes, you were like, oh, thank God.
Yes. Because, well, that remote was set in stone for the next day because it was to help promote Ride Along 2, the sequel to Ride Along. And so we were, And there was a ride-along remote we did with Kevin Hart and Ice Cube where they went with a Lyft driver. And this was 2 years later. And it's like, oh, it's going to be the follow-up. So it was locked down in advance and it had to happen that day. And there was actually our producer, Jason Shalemi, helped find somebody to be a student driver who had no connection with the show. And that fell through around a half an hour before we called you. And I remember at the time, I was like, this person we were going to do it with seemed perfect. And then I forget who suggested you, but we asked you and you said yes. And then I can't imagine it having been anyone other than you. You were so perfect.
It was fate.
Oh my God. It was fate.
Divine intervention.
Yes.
I remember you telling me it was a maybe up until I got to the studio, like on Saturday morning. You were just like, don't worry. Like it may or may not happen. Like just come ready to do it, but it might not really happen.
Right.
So was that on purpose? Because that really actually helped me not be nervous.
Ooh. Oh, yes. That's part of my genius.
Okay.
I mean, the key thing, of course, was to find out if you were available. And so when you said, yes, you could do it, I was just like, oh, thank God. And then, I mean, there's always a chance something can fall through. So I think I was just, no, it was not intentional. So anyway, go ahead. Why don't you tell us more about what it was like from your perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah. I showed up on Saturday morning, just like mentally, like prepared to like, okay, I might have to do this, but mostly like, you know, I'll just sit and I'll just be here as a backup, you know, I'm the understudy.
Right.
Right.
But as soon as like I got backstage and you were there, Sweeney, and like the rest of the crew was there, like you were like, oh, it's you. Go see makeup.
Suit up. Yeah.
And Matt O'Brien was there. Matt O'Brien and I went on that remote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So at that point, did you start feeling nervous?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You didn't seem nervous, but you know what's good? You had a task to do. You had to drive.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And you had to pay attention when you were driving.
That really, really helped. Yeah, and being obviously with Conan, like, really helped because he's so good at what he does, obviously.
Right.
That like once he sucks you into his conversation, it's just like being in a conversation with Conan and like you don't think about like, oh, I have to like be funny. I have to perform. Yeah. I have to like have some like comebacks or whatever. It was just like a normal day.
So then did you really just feel like, all right, I'm just going to go with the flow and see what happens?
Well, Sweeney,
here,
you and Matt O'Brien told me like, you did prepare me a little bit, like once you were like, oh, it's you, go. You also, well, first you said, do you have a weed card?
Yeah.
Because you might go to a dispensary, you might not, who knows. And then also you were like, and also just like be yourself. Like it's like you don't need to like do anything. That, you know, that also helped me not be nervous.
Yes.
And that was true because Conan did like lead the way and I just needed to like just be there for it.
Right. And we do tell everyone that it does remote with him. Don't the worst thing you can do is try to be funny.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Or try to be a jokester with him. It's like, just be yourself and those are usually the best remotes. And he gets to act like, you know, that the ass is he, and I'm quoting him now. That was Matt O'Brien's idea. I think was the dispensary, like, oh, we should stop at a dispensary. And so, and of course that was, you know, there was some great elevations in that. First we start with you and we thought, oh, let's get some stuff going. Just you and Conan. And it's a surprise when Kevin Hart and Ice Cube show up, of course, and it helps kind of kick it up to another level. And then a lot of, you know what, Diana, if you remember, I don't know what your perception was in the car with Conan, but we were following you in a van, but it was pretty random for the most part. You guys just driving around, mm-hmm. where you went, where mm-hmm. you ended up.
I think so.
You just happened to drive through. I don't know if people know this. There's a pinata district in downtown LA where they sell.
Which is pretty perfect.
It's and we drove by it and it was like, oh, let's get a, you know, of course, get out and get a pinata, which
Well, of course, yeah.
We ended up bringing it back once you're in the dispensary. So, I mean, those things just evolved, like you just evolved as it all unfolded.
Yeah.
Was it stressful driving all those celebrities? Because I mean, that would be the main thing. I would be like, oh my God, yeah. I can't let them. It's already stressful enough when someone's just watching you park. But then have all these people, all these spectators while you're driving.
Oh, yeah.
And they're important people.
I know. I really didn't want to kill three famous people.
Wow. What an amazing story that would have been. Yeah. that might have haunted you a little bit.
Yeah. No, I couldn't. Like, I don't think I breathed that entire time. Wow. I don't know how, like, I got the words out because I knew I couldn't, like, feel myself inhale and exhale.
Wow. That's amazing because you just seem very calm, cool, and collected to me whenever I watch, enough
to like, maybe all my energy was like going into like trying to figure out what was happening and paying attention and not crash. Right. But I remember I was so nervous that like by the end when we got to Popeyes and we ordered that meal and I was like, I normally honestly love Popeyes. it's true.
Popeyes is great.
Yeah. We got like that huge spread of like delicious chicken and biscuits. Yes. And like, I held on to one to eat in the car on the way back to the studio. And like, I just like kept trying to take bites of it. And like, I couldn't swallow because I was so nervous.
Oh, you were still nervous even though it was over?
Decompress. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Still jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a great story from the Popeyes parking lot is, I think when everyone left and Ice Cube and Kevin took off and we're all going to go back to the studio. I think Jason Shalemi, the producer, or someone said, oh, you know, there's all that pot under in the back seat. Grab that. And then they're like, where is it? And they're like, oh, Ice Cube took it.
God.
I grabbed some of it too, though. I ended up framing the joint that we smoked.
Really?
I did.
That's
such a great souvenir.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, I love that too. Well, I also love it's kind of like an emergency joint, like break glass if it's an emergency.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can access it.
So it's in this like...
Oh, cute.
That's great.
That's so fun. Yeah, I mean, that's so special. If you get into trouble, you can always sell it.
Right. Yep. It's my insurance policy.
Exactly.
How was it meeting Ice Cube and Kevin Hart? Were you a fan of either of theirs?
I mean, I love them.
They were both so, they were so funny in both of those remotes and they're great with Conan. But, and yeah, I just love both of them after getting to see them work like that. It was so much fun.
Do people ever recognize you from that remote?
Oh my gosh. The first week after that remote, everywhere I went.
Really?
Yeah, people were yelling my name.
Ah!
Wow.
Everyone was texting
me. Oh no.
It was wild. It was really exciting.
What about your family? Where did you have to like prime them? Like, okay, this thing's going to come out. And
oh, right.
I mentioned it to them, but you know, like before it came out, you never know how like big something's gonna be. Like obviously we were there, it was like this is gonna be huge, right? But then like you never know, so like I kind of told them it, like the holidays went by before the video was released, like the first week of January, so like I told them when I was seeing them for the holidays, like I did this cool thing. I don't know if it's that cool though.
Don't worry about it.
And then like after it came out, they were like, they were telling them like their friends who don't even know me were sending them like just this random video because it was hilarious, not because it was me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they were like,
that's...
And then it like turned out it was you. Like,
really,
what happened?
Viral.
Why didn't you tell us? And I was like, I did tell you.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's great.
Your official title is Manager of Outreach and Marketing. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, cool. What does that mean that you do for Team Coco?
Well, I'm on the marketing team. My role is mostly like running our newsletter and getting our merch to happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh. You do merch stuff. That's pretty fun.
There's a newsletter? I didn't know.
I didn't know it either.
TeamCoco.com/join.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, subscribe.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
Yeah, I guess we will.
You'll get to read my amazing copy.
I'm going to check it out.
If it's as good as your driving, I'm in.
Nice.
Thanks, Diana.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Diana.
Yeah.
That was really fun catching up. And if anyone has listener questions, we only have room for a couple more. So this is your last chance to get your
burning
questions answered.
I hope they're not literally burning.
Yes.
Yes, please send them in. Well, we love getting voicemails. We just had one, of course. Here's the number, 323-209-5303, or you can email us your question at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
And I can't think of anything else to say. I'm really at a loss.
It's called doing the dismount.
Psychologists would say it's like we don't want this to actually end. I'm stalling.
I know. We always stall. Well, we usually try to think of a good way into it.
I know. I think that's what it is.
Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes you just have to say.
Sometimes you just have to say what's on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing is we love you.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.